day and night and not speak to you when I have a mind is burying me alive. If luck would have it that animals spoke, as they did in the days of Ghisopete, it would not be so bad, because I could talk to Rosinante about whatever came into my head, and so put up with my ill fortune. But it is a hard case, and not to be borne with patience, to go seeking adventures all one's life and get nothing but kicks and blanketings, brickbats and punches, and with all this to have to sew up one's mouth without daring to say what is in one's heart, just as if one were dumb.
"I understand thee, Sancho," replied Don Quixote. "Thou art dying to have the interdict I placed upon thy tongue removed. Consider it removed, and say what thou wilt while we are wandering in these mountains."
"So be it," said Sancho. "Let me speak now, for God knows what will happen by and by. And to take advantage of the permit at once, I ask, what made your worship stand up so for that Queen Majimusa, or whatever her name is? Or what did it matter whether that abbot was a friend of hers or not? For if your worship had let that pass, and you were not a judge in the matter, it is my belief the madman would have gone on with his story, and the blow of the stone and the kicks and more than half a dozen cuffs would have been escaped."
"In faith, Sancho," answered Don Quixote, "if thou knewest, as I do, what an honourable and illustrious lady Queen Madasima was, I know thou wouldst say I had great patience that I did not break in pieces the mouth that uttered such blasphemies, for a very great blasphemy it is, to say or imagine that a queen has made free with a surgeon. The truth of the story is that Master Elizabad, whom the madman mentioned, was a man of great prudence and sound judgment, and served as governor and physician to the queen. But to suppose that she was his mistress is nonsense, deserving very severe punishment. And as a proof that Cardenio did not know what he was saying, remember, when he said it, he was out of his wits."
"That is what I say," said Sancho. "There was no occasion for minding the words of a madman. For if good luck had not helped your worship, and he had sent that stone at your head instead of at your breast, a fine way we should have been in for standing up for my lady yonder, God confound her. And then would not Cardenio have gone free as a madman?"
"Against men in their senses, or against madmen," said Don Quixote, "every knight-errant is bound to stand up for the honour of women, whoever they may be, much more for queens of such high degree and dignity as Queen Madasima, for whom I have a particular regard on account of her amiable qualities. For besides being extremely beautiful, she was very wise, and very patient under her misfortunes, of which she had many. And the counsel and society of the Master Elizabeth were a great help and support to her in enduring her afflictions with wisdom and resignation. Hence the ignorant and ill-disposed vulgar took occasion to say and think that she was his mistress, and they lie, I say it once more, and will lie 200 times more, all who say and think so."
"I neither say nor think so," said Sancho. "Let them look to it. With their bread let them eat it. They have rendered account to God whether they misbehaved or not. I come from my vineyard. I know nothing. I am not fond of prying into other men's lives. He who buys and lies feels it in his purse. Moreover, naked was I born, naked I find myself. I neither lose nor gain. But if they did, what is that to me? Many think there are flitches where there are no hooks, but who could put gates to the open plain? Moreover, they said of God—"
"God bless me," said Don Quixote. "What a set of absurdities thou art stringing together! What has what we are talking about got to do with the proverbs thou art threading one after the other? For God's sake, hold thy tongue, Sancho, and henceforward keep to prodding thy ass, and don't meddle in what does not concern thee. And understand with all thy 5 senses that everything I have done, am doing, or shall do, is well founded on reason and in conformity with the rules of chivalry, for I understand them better than all the world that profess them."
"Señor," replied Sancho, "is it a good rule of chivalry that we should go astray through these mountains without path or road, looking for a madman who, when he is found, will perhaps take a fancy to finish what he began, not his story, but your worship's head and my ribs, and end by breaking them all together for us?"
"Peace, I say again, Sancho," said Don Quixote. "For let me tell thee, it is not so much the desire of finding that madman that leads me into these regions, as that which I have of performing among them an achievement wherewith I shall win eternal name and fame throughout the known world. And it shall be such that I shall thereby set the seal on all that can make a knight-errant perfect and famous."
"And is it very perilous, this achievement?"
"No," replied he of the rueful countenance, "though it may be in the dice that we may throw deuce ace instead of sixes, but all will depend on thy diligence."
"On my diligence?" said Sancho.
"Yes," said Don Quixote. "For if thou dost return soon from the place where I mean to send thee, my penance will soon be over, and my glory will soon begin. But as it is not right to keep thee any longer in suspense, waiting to see what comes of my words, I would have thee know, Sancho, that the famous Amadis of Gaul was one of the most perfect knights-errant. But I am wrong to say he was one. He stood alone, the first, the only one, the lord of all that were in the world in his time. A fig for Don Belianis, and for all who say he equalled him in any respect, for my oath upon it, they are deceiving themselves. I say, too, that when a painter desires to become famous in his art, he endeavours to copy the originals of the rarest painters that he knows. And the same rule holds good for all the most important crafts and callings that serve to adorn a state. Thus must he who would be esteemed prudent and patient imitate Ulysses, in whose person and labours Homer presents to us a lively picture of prudence and patience. As Virgil, too, shows us in the person of Aeneas the virtue of a pious son and the sagacity of a brave and skilful captain, not representing or describing them as they were, but as they ought to be, so as to leave the example of their virtues to posterity. In the same way, Amadis was the pole star, day star, son of valiant and devoted knights, whom all we who fight under the banner of love and chivalry are bound to imitate. This, then, being so, I consider, friend Sancho, that the knight-errant who shall imitate him most closely will come nearest to reaching the perfection of chivalry. Now, one of the instances in which this knight most conspicuously showed his prudence, worth, valour and endurance, fortitude and love, was when he withdrew, rejected by the Lady Oriana, to do penance upon the Peña Pobre, changing his name into that of Beltenebros, a name assuredly significant and appropriate to the life which he had voluntarily adopted. So, as it is easier for me to imitate him in this than in cleaving giants asunder, cutting off the serpents' heads, slaying dragons, routing armies, destroying fleets and breaking enchantments, and as this place is so well suited for a similar purpose, I must not allow the opportunity to escape, which now so conveniently offers me its forelock."
"What is it in reality," said Sancho, "that your worship means to do in such an out-of-the-way place as this?"
"Have I not told thee," answered Don Quixote, "that I mean to imitate Amadis here, playing the victim of despair, the madman, the maniac, so as at the same time to imitate the valiant Don Roland, when at the fountain he had evidence of the fair Angelica having disgraced herself with Medoro, and through grief thereat went mad, and plucked up trees, troubled the waters of the clear springs, slew destroyed flocks, burned down huts, levelled houses, dragged mares after him, and perpetrated 100,000 other outrages worthy of everlasting renown and record. And though I have no intention of imitating Roland, or Orlando, or Rotolando, for he went by all these names, step by step, in all the mad things he did, said, and thought, I will make a rough copy, to the best of my power, of all that seems to me most essential. But perhaps I shall content myself with the simple imitation of Amadis, who, without giving way to any mischievous madness, but merely to tears and sorrow, gained as much fame as the most famous."
"It seems to me," said Sancho, "that the knights who behaved in this way had provocation and cause for those follies and penances. But what cause has your worship for going mad? What lady has rejected you, or what evidence have you found to prove that the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso has been trifling with Moor or Christian?"
"There is the point," replied Don Quixote, "and that is the beauty of this business of mine. No thanks to a knight-errant for going mad when he has cause. The thing is to turn crazy without any provocation, and let my lady know, if I do this in the dry, what I would do in the moist. Moreover, I have abundant cause in the long separation I have endured from my lady till death, Dulcinea del Toboso. For as thou didst hear that shepherd Ambrosio say the other day, in absence all ills are felt and feared. And so, friend Sancho, waste no time in advising me against so rare, so happy, and so unheard of an imitation.
Mad I am, and mad I must be until thou returnest with the answer to a letter that I mean to send by thee to my lady Dulcinea. And if it be such as my constancy deserves, my insanity and penance will come to an end. And if it be to the opposite effect, I shall become mad in earnest, and being so, I shall suffer no more. Thus, in whatever way she may answer, I shall escape from the struggle and affliction in which thou wilt leave me, enjoying in my senses the boon thou bearest me, or, as a madman, not feeling the evil thou bringest me. But tell me, Sancho, hast thou got Mambrino's helmet safe? For I saw thee take it up from the ground when that ungrateful wretch tried to break it in pieces, but could not, by which the fineness of its temper may be seen. To which Sancho made answer, By the living God, Sir Knight of the Rueful Countenance, I cannot endure or bear with patience some of the things that your worship says, and from them I begin to suspect that all you tell me about chivalry and winning kingdoms and empires and giving islands and bestowing other rewards and dignities after the custom of knights errant must be all made up of wind and lies, and all pigments or figments or whatever we may call them. For what would anyone think that heard your worship calling a barber's basin Mambrino's helmet without ever seeing the mistake all this time, but that one who says and maintains such things must have his brains addled? I have the basin in my sack all dinted, and I am taking it home to have it mended, to trim my beard in it if, by God's grace, I am allowed to see my wife and children some day or other.
Look here, Sancho, said Don Quixote. By him thou didst swear by just now, I swear thou hast the most limited understanding that any squire in the world has or ever had. Is it possible that all this time thou hast been going on about with me, thou hast never found out that all things belonging to knights-errant seem to be illusions and nonsense and ravings, and to go always by contraries? And not because it really is so, but because there is always a swarm of enchanters in attendance upon us that change and alter everything with us, and turn things as they please, and according as they are disposed to, aid or destroy us. Thus, what seems to thee a barber's basin, seems to me Mambrino's helmet, and to another it will seem something else. And rare foresight it was in the sage who is on my side to make what is really and truly Mambrino's helmet seem a basin to everybody, for being held in such estimation as it is, all the world would pursue me to rob me of it. But when they see it is only a barber's basin, they do not take the trouble to obtain it, as was plainly shown by him who tried to break it and left it on the ground without taking it, for, by my faith, had he known it, he would never have left it behind. Keep it safe, my friend. For just now I have no need of it. Indeed, I shall have to take off all this armour and remain as naked as I was born, if I have a mind to follow Roland rather than Amadis in my penance.
Thus talking, they reached the foot of a high mountain which stood like an isolated peak among the others that surrounded it. Past its base there flowed a gentle brook. All around it spread a meadow so green and luxuriant that it was a delight to the eyes to look upon it, and forest trees in abundance, and shrubs and flowers added to the charms of the spot. Upon this place the Knight of the Rueful Countenance fixed his choice for the performance of his penance, and as he beheld it, exclaimed in a loud voice, as though he were out of his senses,
This is the place, O ye heavens, that I select and choose for bewailing the misfortune in which ye yourselves have plunged me. This is the spot where the overflowings of mine eyes shall swell the waters of yon little brook, and my deep and endless sighs shall stir unceasingly the leaves of these mountain trees, in testimony and token of the pain my persecuted heart is suffering. O, ye rural deities, whoever ye be that haunt this lone spot, give ear to the complaint of a wretched lover, whom long absence and brooding jealousy have driven to bewail his fate among these wilds, and complain of the hard heart of that fair and ungrateful one, the end and limit of all human beauty. O, ye wood nymphs and dryads that dwell in the thickets of the forest, so may the nimble wanton satyrs by whom ye are vainly wooed never disturb your sweet repose. Help me to lament my hard fate, or at least weary not at listening to it. O Dulcinea del Toboso, day of my night, glory of my pain, guide of my path, star of my fortune, so may heaven grant thee in full all thou seekest of it, bethink thee of the place and condition to which absence from thee has brought me, and make me that return in kindness that is due to my fidelity. O lonely trees, that from this day forward shall bear me company in my solitude, give me some sign by the gentle movement of your boughs that my presence is not distasteful to you. O thou, my squire, pleasant companion in my prosperous and adverse fortunes, fix well in thy memory what thou shalt see me do here, so that thou mayest relate and report it to the sole cause of all.
And so saying, he dismounted from Rocinante, and in an instant relieved him of saddle and bridle, and giving him a slap on the croup, said,
He gives thee freedom who is bereft of it himself. O steed, as excellent indeed as thou art unfortunate in thy lot, begone where thou wilt, for thou bearest written on thy forehead that neither Astolfo's hippogriff nor the famed Frontino that cost Bradamante so dear could equal thee in speed.
Seeing this, Sancho said, Good luck to him who has saved us the trouble of stripping the pack-saddle off Dapple. By my faith, he would not have gone without a slap on the croup and something said in his praise, though if he were here I would not have let anyone strip him, for there would be no occasion, as he had nothing of the lover or victim of despair about him, inasmuch as his master, which I was while it was God's pleasure, was nothing of the sort. And indeed, Sir Knight of the Rueful Countenance, if my departure and your worship's madness are to come off in earnest, it will be as well to saddle Rocinante again, in order that he may supply the want of Dapple, because it will save me time in going and returning. For if I go on foot, I don't know when I shall get there, or when I shall get back, as I am. In truth, a bad walker.
I declare, Sancho, returned Don Quixote, it shall be as thou wilt, for thy plan does not seem to me a bad one. And 3 days hence thou wilt depart, for I wish thee to observe in the meantime what I do and say for her sake, that thou mayest be able to tell it.
But what more have I to see besides what I have seen? Said Sancho.
Much thou knowest about it, said Don Quixote. I have now got to tear up my garments, to scatter about my armour, knock my head against these rocks, and more of the same sort of thing, which thou must witness.
For the love of God, said Sancho, be careful, your worship, how you give yourself those knocks on the head, for you may come across such a rock and in such a way that the very first may put an end to the whole contrivance of this penance. And I should think, if indeed knocks on the head seem necessary to you, and this business cannot be done without them, you might be content, as the whole thing is feigned and counterfeit and in joke, you might be content, I say, with giving them to yourself in the water, or against something soft, like cotton, and leave it all to me, for I'll tell my lady that your worship knocked your head against a point of rock harder than a diamond.
I thank thee for thy good intentions, friend Sancho, answered Don Quixote. But I would have thee know that all these things I am doing are not in joke, but very much in earnest. For anything else would be a transgression of the ordinances of chivalry, which forbid us to tell any lie whatever under the penalties due to apostasy. And to do one thing instead of another is just the same as lying. So my knocks on the head must be real, solid, and valid, without anything sophisticated or fanciful about them. And it will be needful to leave me some lint to dress my wounds, since fortune has compelled us to do without the balsam we lost.
It was worse losing the ass, replied Sancho, for with him lint and all were lost. But I beg of your worship not to remind me again of that accursed liquor, for my soul, not to say my stomach, turns at hearing the very name of it. And I beg of you, too, to reckon as past the 3 days you allowed me for seeing the mad things you do, for I take them as seen already and pronounced upon. And I will tell wonderful stories to my lady. So write the letter and send me off at once, for I long to return and take your worship out of this purgatory where I am leaving you.
Purgatory, dost thou call it, Sancho? Said Don Quixote. Rather call it hell, or even worse, if there be anything worse.
For one who is in hell, said Sancho, nulla est retentio, as I have heard say.
I do not understand what retentio means, said Don Quixote.
Retentio, answered Sancho, means that whoever is in hell never comes nor can come out of it, which will be the opposite case with your worship, or my legs will be idle. That is, if I have spurs to enliven Rocinante. Let me once get to El Toboso and into the presence of my lady Dulcinea, and I will tell her such things of the follies and madnesses, for it is all one, that your worship has done and is still doing, that I will manage to make her softer than a glove, though I find her harder than a cork tree. And with her sweet and honeyed answer I will come back through the air like a witch, and take your worship out of this purgatory that seems to be hell but is not, as there is hope of getting out of it, which, as I have said, those in hell have not, and I believe your worship will not say anything to the contrary.
That is true, said he of the rueful countenance. But how shall we manage to write the letter?
And the ass-colt order, too, added Sancho.
All shall be included, said Don Quixote. And as there is no paper, it would be well done to write it on the leaves of trees, as the ancients did, or on tablets of wax, though that would be as hard to find just now as paper. But it has just occurred to me how it may be conveniently and even more than conveniently written, and that is in the notebook that belonged to Cardenio, and thou wilt take care to have it copied on paper in a good hand at the first village thou comest to, where there is a schoolmaster, or, if not, any sacristan will copy it. But see thou give it not to any notary to copy, for they write a law hand that Satan could not make out.
But what is to be done about the signature? Said Sancho.
The letters of Amadis were never signed, said Don Quixote.
That is all very well, said Sancho, but the order must needs be signed, and if it is copied they will say the signature is false, and I shall be left without ass-colts.
The order shall go signed in the same book, said Don Quixote, and on seeing it my niece will make no difficulty about obeying it. As to the love-letter thou canst put by way of signature, yours till death, the Knight of the Rueful Countenance. And it will be no great matter if it is in some other person's hand, for, as well as I recollect, Dulcinea can neither read nor write, nor, in the whole course of her life, has she seen handwriting or letters of mine, for my love and hers have been always platonic, not going beyond a modest look, and even that so seldom that I can safely swear I have not seen her 4 times in all these 12 years. I have been loving her more than the light of these eyes that the earth will one day devour. And, perhaps, even of those 4 times, she has not once perceived that I was looking at her. Such is the retirement and seclusion in which her father, Lorenzo Corchuelo, and her mother, Aldonzo Nogales, have brought her up.
So, said Sancho, Lorenzo Corchuelo's daughter is the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, otherwise called Aldonza Lorenzo?
She it is, said Don Quixote, and she it is that is worthy to be lady of the whole universe.
I know her well, said Sancho. Let me tell you, she can fling a crowbar as well as the lustiest lad in all the town, by all that's good. But she's a brave lass, and a right and stout one, and more than able to look after herself with any knight-errant who may try and make her his lady. The whoreson and wench, she's strong, and what a voice! I can tell you, one day she posted herself on the top of the belfry of the village to call some labourers of theirs that were in a ploughed field of her father's, and though they were better than half a league off, they heard her as well as if they were at the foot of the tower. And the best of her is that she's not a bit prudish, for she has plenty of affability, and jokes with everybody, and has a grin and a jest for everything. So, Sir Knight of the Rueful Countenance, I say, you not only may and ought to do mad freaks for her sake, but you have a good right to give way to despair and hang yourself. And no one who knows of it but will say you did well, though the devil should take you. And I wish I were on my road already, simply to see her, for it is many a day since I saw her, and she must be altered by this time. For going about the fields always, and the sun and the air, spoil women's looks greatly. But I must own the truth, your worship, Señor Don Quixote. Until now I have been under a great mistake, for I believed truly and honestly that the Lady Dulcinea must be some princess your worship was in love with, or some person great enough to deserve the rich presents you have sent her, such as the Biscayan and the galley slaves, and many more, no doubt, for your worship must have won many victories in the time when I was not yet your squire. But all things considered, what good can it do the Lady Aldonza Lorenzo, I mean the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, to have the vanquished your worship sends or will send coming to her and going down on their knees before her? Because maybe when they came she'd be hackling flax or threshing on the threshing floor, and they'd be ashamed to see her, and she'd laugh or resent the present.
"'I have before now told thee many times, Sancho,' said Don Quixote, "'that thou art a mighty great chatterer, "'and that with a blunt wit thou art always striving at sharpness. "'But to show thee what a fool thou art and how rational I am, "'I would have thee listen to a short story. "'Thou must know that a certain widow, fair, young, independent and rich, "'and above all free and easy,' fell in love with a sturdy, strapping young lay brother. His superior came to know of it, and one day said to the worthy widow, by way of brotherly remonstrance, "'I am surprised, Senora, and not without good reason, that a woman of such high standing, so fair and so rich as you are, should have fallen in love with such a mean, low, stupid fellow as so-and-so. When in this house there are so many masters, graduates, and divinity students, from among whom you might choose as if they were a lot of pears, saying, "This one I'll take, that I won't take." But she replied to him with great sprightliness and candour, "My dear sir, you are very much mistaken, and your ideas are very old-fashioned. If you think that I have made a bad choice in so-and-so, fool as he seems, because for all I want with him, he knows as much and more philosophy than Aristotle. In the same way, Sancho, for all I want with Dulcinea del Toboso, she is just as good as the most exalted princess on earth. It is not to be supposed that all those poets who sang the praises of ladies under the fancy names they give them had any such mistresses. Thinkest thou that the Amaryllises, the Phyllises, the Sylvias, the Dianas, the Galateas, the Philidas, and all the rest of them that the books, the ballads, the barbershops, the theatres are full of, were really and truly ladies of flesh and blood and mistresses of those that glorify and have glorified them? Nothing of the kind. They only invent them, for the most part, to furnish a subject for their verses, and that they may pass for lovers, or for men valiant enough to be so. And so it suffices me to think and believe that the good Aldonza Lorenzo is fair and virtuous. And as to her pedigree, it is very little matter, for no one will examine into it for the purpose of conferring any order upon her, and I, for my part, reckon her the most exalted princess in the world. For thou shouldst know, Sancho, if thou dost not know, that two things alone beyond all others are incentives to love, and these are great beauty and a good name. And these two things are to be found in Dulcinea in the highest degree, for in beauty no one equals her, and in good name few approach her. And to put the whole thing in a nutshell, I persuade myself that all I say is as I say, neither more nor less, and I picture her in my imagination as I would have her to be, as well in beauty as in condition. Helen approaches her not, nor does Lucretia come up to her, nor any other of the famous women of times past, Greek, barbarian, or Latin, and let each say what he will. For if in this I am taken to task by the ignorant, I shall not be censured by those of sound judgment. "'I say that your worship is entirely right,' said Sancho, "'and that I am an ass. "'But I know not how the name of ass came into my mouth, "'for a rope is not to be mentioned in the house of him who has been hanged. "'But now for the letter, and then, God be with you, I am off.' "'Don Quixote took out the notebook, "'and retiring to one side, very deliberately began to write the letter. "'And when he had finished it, he called to Sancho, "'saying he wished to read it to him, "'so that he might commit it to memory in case of losing it on the road.' For with evil fortune like his anything might be apprehended. To which Sancho replied, "'Write it two or three times there in the book, and give it to me, and I will carry it very carefully, because to expect me to keep it in my memory is all nonsense, for I have such a bad one that I often forget my own name. But for all that, repeat it to me, as I shall like to hear it, for surely it will run as if it was in print.' "'Listen,' said Don Quixote, "'this is what it says.' Don Quixote's letter to Dulcinea del Toboso. Sovereign and exalted lady, the pierced by the point of absence, the wounded to the heart's core, sends thee, sweetest Dulcinea del Toboso, the health that he himself enjoys not.
If thy beauty despises me, if thy worth is not for me, if thy scorn is my affliction, though I be sufficiently long-suffering, hardly shall I endure this anxiety, which, besides being oppressive, is protracted. My good squire Sancho will relate to thee in full, fair, ingrate, dear enemy, the condition to which I am reduced on thy account. If it be thy pleasure to give me relief, I am thine. If not, do as may be pleasing to thee, for by ending my life I shall satisfy thy cruelty and my desire. Thine till death, the Knight of the Rueful Countenance.
"By the life of my father," said Sancho when he heard the letter, "it is the loftiest thing I ever heard. Body of me, how your worship says everything as you like in it, and how well you fit in the Knight of the Rueful Countenance into the signature. I declare, your worship is indeed the very devil, and there is nothing you don't know."
"Everything is needed for the calling I follow," said Don Quixote.
"Now then," said Sancho, "let your worship put the order for the three ass colts on the other side, and sign it very plainly, that they may recognize it at first sight."
"With all my heart," said Don Quixote, and as he had written it, he read it to this effect: "Mistress Niece, by this first bill of ass colts, please pay to Sancho Panza, my squire, 3 of the 5 I left at home in your charge. Said 3 ass colts to be paid and delivered for the same number received here in hand, which upon this and upon his receipt shall be duly paid. Done in the heart of the Sierra Morena, the 27th of August of this present year."
"That'll do," said Sancho. "Now let your worship sign it."
"There is no need to sign it," said Don Quixote,
"but merely to put my flourish, which is the same as a signature, and enough for 3 asses, or even 300.
"I can trust your worship," returned Sancho. "Let me go and saddle Rocinante, and be ready to give me your blessing, for I mean to go at once without seeing the fooleries your worship is going to do. I'll say I saw you do so many that she will not want any more."
"At any rate, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "I should like, and there is reason for it, I should like thee, I say, to see me stripped to the skin and performing a dozen or 2 of insanities, which I can get done in less than 30 minutes. For having seen them with thine own eyes, thou canst then safely swear to the rest that thou wouldst add. And I promise thee thou wilt not tell of as many as I mean to perform."
"For the love of God, master mine," said Sancho, "let me not see your worship stripped, for it will sorely grieve me, and I shall not be able to keep from tears, and my head aches so with all I shed last night for Dapple, that I am not fit to begin any fresh weeping.
But if it is your worship's pleasure that I should see some insanities, do them in your clothes, short ones, and such as come readiest to hand, for I myself want nothing of the sort. And as I have said, it will be a saving of time for my return, which will be with the news your worship desires and deserves.
If not, let the Lady Dulcinea look to it. If she does not answer reasonably, I swear as solemnly as I can that I will fetch a fair answer out of her stomach with kicks and cuffs. For why should it be borne that a knight-errant as famous as your worship should go mad without rhyme or reason for a—" "Her ladyship had best not drive me to say it, for by God I will speak out and let off everything cheap, even if it doesn't sell. I'm pretty good at that. She little knows me. Faith, if she knew me, she'd be in awe of me."
"In faith, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "to all appearance thou art no sounder in thy wits than I."
"I am not so mad," answered Sancho, "but I am more peppery. But apart from all this, what has your worship to eat until I come back? Will you sally out on the road like Cardenio to force it from the shepherds?"
"Let not that anxiety trouble thee," replied Don Quixote, "for even if I had it, I should not eat anything but the herbs and the fruits which this meadow and these trees may yield me. The beauty of this business of mine lies in not eating, and in performing other mortifications."
"Do you know what I am afraid of?" said Sancho upon this. "That I shall not be able to find my way back to this spot where I am leaving you. It is such an out-of-the-way place."
"Observe the landmarks well," said Don Quixote, "for I will try not to go far from this neighbourhood, and I will even take care to mount the highest of these rocks to see if I can discover thee returning. However, not to miss me and lose thyself, the best plan will be to cut some branches of the broom that is so abundant about here, and as thou goest, to lay them at intervals until thou hast come out upon the plain. These will serve thee, after the fashion of the clue in the labyrinth of Theseus, as marks and signs for finding me on thy return."
"So I will," said Sancho Panza. and having cut some, he asked his master's blessing, and not without many tears on both sides, took his leave of him. And mounting Rocinante, of whom Don Quixote charged him earnestly to have as much care as of his own person, he set out for the plain, strewing at intervals the branches of broom as his master had recommended him. And so he went his way, though Don Quixote still entreated him to see him do, were it only a couple of mad acts. He had not gone 100 paces, however, when he returned and said, "I must say, Señor, your worship said quite right, that in order to be able to swear without a weight on my conscience that I had seen you do mad things, it would be well for me to see if it were only one, though in your worship's remaining here I have seen a very great one."
"Did I not tell thee so?" said Don Quixote.
"Wait, Sancho, and I will do them in the saying of a credo." And pulling off his breeches in all haste, he stripped himself to his skin and his shirt, and then, without more ado, he cut a couple of capers in the air, and a couple of somersaults, heels overhead, making such a display that, not to see it a second time, Sancho wheeled Rocinante round and felt easy and satisfied in his mind that he could swear he had left his master mad. And so we will leave him to follow his road until his return, which was a quick one. Chapter 26, in which are continued the refinements wherewith Don Quixote played the part of a lover in the Sierra Morena. Returning to the proceedings of him of the rueful countenance when he found himself alone, the history says that when Don Quixote had completed the performance of the somersaults or capers, naked from the waist down and clothed from the waist up, and saw that Sancho had gone off without waiting to see any more crazy feats, he climbed up to the top of a high rock, and there set himself to consider what he had several times before considered, without ever coming to any conclusion on the point, namely, whether it would be better and more to his purpose to imitate the outrageous madness of Roland, or the melancholy madness of Amadis. And communing with himself, he said,
"What wonder is it if Roland was so good a knight and so valiant as everyone says he was, when, after all, he was enchanted, and nobody could kill him save by thrusting a corking pin into the sole of his foot, and he always wore shoes with 7 iron soles. Though cunning devices did not avail him against Bernardo del Carpio, who knew all about them, and strangled him in his arms at Roncesvalles. But putting the question of his valour aside, let us come to his losing his wits, for certain it is that he did lose them in consequence of the proofs he discovered at the fountain, and the intelligence the shepherd gave him of Angelica having slept more than 2 siestas with Medoro, a little curly-headed Moor, and page to Agramante. If he was persuaded that this was true, and that his lady had wronged him, it is no wonder that he should have gone mad. But how am I to imitate him in his madness, unless I can imitate him in the cause of it? For my Dulcinea, I will venture to swear, never saw a Moor in her life, as he is in his proper costume, and she is this day as the mother that bore her, and I should plainly be doing her a wrong if, fancying anything else, I were to go mad with the same kind of madness as Roland the Furious. On the other hand, I see that Amadis of Gaul, without losing his senses and without doing anything mad, acquired as a lover as much fame as the most famous, for, according to his history, on finding himself rejected by his lady Oriana, who had ordered him not to appear in her presence until it should be her pleasure, all he did was to retire to the Peña Pobre in company with a hermit, and there he took his fill of weeping until heaven sent him relief in the midst of his great grief and need. And if this be true, as it is, why should I now take the trouble to strip stark naked, or do mischief to these trees which have done me no harm, or why am I to disturb the clear waters of these brooks which will give me to drink whenever I have a mind? Long live the memory of Amadis, and let him be imitated so far as is possible by Don Quixote of La Mancha, of whom it will be said, as was said of the other, that if he did not achieve great things, he died in attempting them. And if I am not repulsed or rejected by my Dulcinea, it is enough for me, as I have said, to be absent from her. And so, now, to business. Come to my memory, ye deeds of Amadis, and show me how I am to begin to imitate you. Now I know already that what he chiefly did was to pray and commend himself to God.
But what am I to do for a rosary, for I have not got one? And then it occurred to him how he might make one, and that was by tearing a great strip off the tail of his shirt, which hung down, and making 11 knots on it, one bigger than the rest, and this served him for a rosary all the time he was there, during which he repeated countless Ave Marias. But what distressed him greatly was not having another hermit there to confess him and receive consolation from. And so he solaced himself with pacing up and down the little meadow, and writing and carving on the bark of the trees and on the fine sand a multitude of verses all in harmony with his sadness, and some in praise of Dulcinea. But when he was found there afterwards, the only ones completely legible that could be discovered were those that follow here.
Ye on the mountainside that grow, ye green things all, trees, shrubs, and bushes, are ye aweary of the woe that this poor aching bosom crushes? If it disturb you and I owe some reparation, it may be a defence for me to let you know Don Quixote's tears are on the flow, and all for distant Dulcinea del Toboso. The loyalist lover time can show, doomed for a lady love to languish, among these solitudes doth go, a prey to every kind of anguish. Why love should like a spiteful foe thus use him, he hath no idea. But hogsheads full this doth he know, Don Quixote's tears are on the flow, and all for distant Dulcinea del Toboso. Adventure-seeking doth he go, up rugged heights, down rocky valleys, but hill or dale or high or low, mishap attendeth all his sallies. Love still pursues him to and fro, and plies his cruel scourge. Ah me, a relentless fate, an endless woe! Don Quixote's tears are on the flow, and all for distant Dulcinea del Toboso.
The addition of del Toboso to Dulcinea's name gave rise to no little laughter among those who found the above lines, for they suspected Don Quixote must have fancied that, unless he added del Toboso when he introduced the name of Dulcinea, the verse would be unintelligible, which was indeed the fact, as he himself afterwards admitted. He wrote many more, but, as has been said, these three verses were all that could be plainly and perfectly deciphered. In this way, and in sighing and calling on the fauns and satyrs of the woods, and the nymphs of the streams, and echo, moist and mournful, to answer, console, and hear him, as well as in looking for herbs to sustain him, he passed his time until Sancho's return. And had that been delayed 3 weeks, as it was 3 days, the knight of the rueful countenance would have worn such an altered countenance that the mother that bore him would not have known him. And here it will be well to leave him, wrapped up in sighs and verses, to relate how Sancho Panza fared on his mission. As for Sancho Panza, coming out upon the high road, he made for El Toboso, and the next day reached the inn where the mishap of the blanket had befallen him. As soon as he recognized it, he felt as if he were once more living through the air, and he could not bring himself to enter it, though it was an hour when he might well have done so, for it was dinner-time, and he longed to taste something hot, as it had been all cold fare with him for many days past. This craving drove him to draw near to the inn, still undecided whether to go in or not, and, as he was hesitating, there came out 2 persons who at once recognized him, and said to one another,
"Good doctor! Is not he on the horse there, Sancho Panza, who, our adventurer's housekeeper told us, went off with her master as a squire?"
"So it is," said the doctor, "and that is our friend Don Quixote's horse."
And if they knew him so well, it was because they were the curate and the barber of his own village, the same 2 who had carried out the scrutiny and sentence upon the books. And as soon as they recognized Sancho Panza and Rocinante, being anxious to hear of Don Quixote, they approached, and calling him by his name, the curate said,
"Friend Sancho Panza, where is your master?"
Sancho recognized them at once, and determined to keep secret the place and circumstances where and under which he had left his master. So he replied that his master was engaged in a certain quarter on a certain matter of great importance to him, which he could not disclose for the eyes in his head.
"Nay, nay," said the barber, "if you don't tell us where he is, Sancho Panza, we will suspect, as we suspect already, that you have murdered and robbed him, for here you are mounted on his horse. In fact, you must produce the master of the hack, or else take the consequences."
"There is no need of threats with me," said Sancho, "for I am not a man to rob or murder anybody. Let his own fate, or God who made him, kill each one. My master is engaged, very much to his taste, doing penance in the midst of these mountains." And then, off-hand and without stopping, he told them how he had left him, what adventures had befallen him, and how he was carrying a letter to the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, the daughter of Lorenzo Corchuelo, with whom he was over head and ears in love. They were both amazed at what Sancho Panza told them, for though they were aware of Don Quixote's madness and the nature of it, each time they heard of it they were filled with fresh wonder. They then asked Sancho Panza to show them the letter he was carrying to the lady Dulcinea del Toboso. He said it was written in a notebook, and that his master's directions were that he should have it copied on paper at the first village he came to. On this, the curate said if he showed it to him, he himself would make a fair copy of it. Sancho put his hand into his bosom in search of the notebook, but could not find it. Nor, if he had been searching until now, could he have found it, for Don Quixote had kept it, and had never given it to him, nor had he himself thought of asking for it. When Sancho discovered he could not find the book, his face grew deadly pale, and in great haste he again felt his body all over, and seeing plainly it was not to be found, without more ado he seized his beard with both hands and plucked away half of it, and then, as quick as he could and without stopping, gave himself half a dozen cuffs on the face and nose till they were bathed in blood. Seeing this, the curate and the barber asked him what had happened him that he gave himself such rough treatment.
"What has happened?" replied Sancho. "I have but lost from one hand to the other, in a moment, 3 ass-colts, each of them like a castle."
"How is that?" said the barber.
"I have lost the notebook," said Sancho, "that contained the letter to Dulcinea, and an order signed by my master, in which he directed his niece to give me 3 ass-colts out of 4 or 5 he had at home."
And he then told them about the loss of Dapple. The curate consoled him, telling him that when his master was found he would get him to renew the order and make a fresh draft on paper, as was usual and customary, for those made in notebooks were never accepted or honoured. Sancho comforted himself with this, and said that if that were so, the loss of Dulcinea's letter did not trouble him much, for he had it almost by heart, and it could be taken down from him wherever and whenever they liked.
"Repeat it then, Sancho," said the barber, "and we will write it down afterwards."
Sancho Panza stopped to scratch his head to bring back the letter to his memory, and balanced himself now on one foot, now on the other, one moment staring at the ground, the next at the sky, and after having half gnawed off the end of a finger and kept them in suspense waiting for him to begin, he said after a long pause,
"By God, Senor Curate, devil a thing can I recollect of the letter, but it said at the beginning, 'Exalted and subterranean lady.'"
"It cannot have said subterranean," said the barber,
"but superhuman or sovereign." "That is it," said Sancho. "Then, as well as I remember, it went on, 'The wounded and wanting of sleep and the pierced kisses your worship's hands, ungrateful and very unrecognized fair one.' And it said something or other about health and sickness that he was sending her. And from that it went tailing off until it ended with, 'Yours till death, the Knight of the Rueful Countenance.'"
It gave them no little amusement, both of them, to see what a good memory Sancho had, and they complimented him greatly upon it, and begged him to repeat the letter a couple of times more, so that they too might get it by heart to write it out by and by. Sancho repeated it 3 times, and as he did, uttered 3,000 more absurdities. Then he told them more about his master, but he never said a word about the blanketing that had befallen himself in that inn, into which he refused to enter. He told them, moreover, how his lord, if he brought him a favourable answer from the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, was to put himself in the way of endeavouring to become an emperor, or at least a monarch, for it had been so settled between them, and with his personal worth and the might of his arm, it was an easy matter to come to be one. And how, on becoming one, his lord was to make a marriage for him, for he would be a widower by that time as a matter of course, and was to give him as a wife one of the damsels of the empress, the heiress of some rich and grand state on the mainland, having nothing to do with islands of any sort, for he did not care for them now. All this Sancho delivered with so much composure, wiping his nose from time to time, and with so little common sense, that his two hearers were again filled with wonder at the force of Don Quixote's madness that could run away with this poor man's reason. They did not care to take the trouble of disabusing him of his error, as they considered that since it did not in any way hurt his conscience, it would be better to leave him in it, and they would have all the more amusement in listening to his simplicities. And so they bade him pray to God for his lord's health, as it was a very likely and a very feasible thing for him in course of time to come to be an emperor, as he said, or at least an archbishop or some other dignitary of equal rank. To which Sancho made answer, "If fortune, sirs, should bring things about in such a way that my master should have a mind, instead of being an emperor, to be an archbishop, I should like to know what archbishops errant commonly give their squires." "They commonly give them," said the curate, "some simple parish or sinecure, or some place as a sacristan which brings them a good fixed income, not counting the altar fees, which may be reckoned at as much more." "But for that," said Sancho, "the squire must be unmarried, and must know, at any rate, how to help at mass, and if that be so, woe is me, for I'm married already, and I don't know the first letter of the ABC. What will become of me if my master takes a fancy to be an archbishop, and not an emperor, as is usual and customary with knights-errant?"
"Be not uneasy, friend Sancho," said the barber, "for we will entreat your master, and advise him, even urging it upon him as a cause of conscience, to become an emperor and not an archbishop, because it will be easier for him, as he is more valiant than lettered."
"So I have thought," said Sancho, "though I can tell you he is fit for anything. What I mean to do for my part is to pray to our Lord to place him where it may be best for him, and where he may be able to bestow most favours upon me."
"You speak like a man of sense," said the curate, "and you will be acting like a good Christian. But what must now be done is to take steps to coax your master out of that useless penance you say he is performing. And we had best turn into this inn to consider what plan to adopt, and also to dine, for it is now time."
Sancho said they might go in, but that he would wait there outside, and that he would tell them afterwards the reason why he was unwilling, and why it did not suit him to enter it. But he begged them to bring him out something to eat, and to let it be hot, and also to bring barley for Rocinante. They left him and went in, and presently the barber brought him out something to eat. By and by, after they had between them carefully thought over what they should do to carry out their object, the curate hit upon an idea very well adapted to humour Don Quixote and effect their purpose, and his notion, which he explained to the barber, was that he himself should assume the disguise of a wandering damsel, while the other should try as best he could to pass for a squire, and that they should thus proceed to where Don Quixote was, and he, pretending to be an aggrieved and distressed damsel, should ask a favour of him, which, as a valiant knight-errant, he could not refuse to grant. And the favour he meant to ask him was that he should accompany her whither she would conduct him, in order to redress a wrong which a wicked knight had done her, while, at the same time, she should entreat him not to require her to remove her mask, nor ask her any questions touching her circumstances, until he had righted her with the wicked knight. And he had no doubt that Don Quixote would comply with any request made in these terms, and that in this way they might remove him, and take him to his own village, where they would endeavour to find out if his extraordinary madness admitted of any kind of remedy.
Chapter 27 Of how the curate and the barber proceeded with their scheme, together with other matters worthy of record in this great history. The curate's plan did not seem a bad one to the barber, but on the contrary so good that they immediately set about putting it in execution. They begged a petticoat and hood of the landlady, leaving her in pledge a new cassock of the curate's, and the barber made a beard out of an old grey-brown or red ox-tail in which the landlord used to keep his combs. The landlady asked them what they wanted these things for, and the curate told her in a few words about the madness of Don Quixote, and how this disguise was intended to get him away from the mountain where he then was. The landlord and landlady immediately came to the conclusion that the madman was their guest, the balsam man and master of the blanketed squire, and they told the curate all that had passed between him and them, not omitting what Sancho had been so silent about. Finally, the landlady dressed up the curate in a style that left nothing to be desired. She put on him a cloth petticoat with black velvet stripes, a palm broad, all slashed, and a bodice of green velvet set off by a binding of white satin,
which, as well as the petticoat, must have been made in the time of King Wamba. The curate would not let them hood him, but put on his head a little quilted linen cap, which he used for a nightcap, and bound his forehead with a strip of black silk, while, with another, he made a mask, with which he concealed his beard and face very well. He then put on his hat, which was broad enough to serve him for an umbrella, and enveloping himself in his cloak, seated himself woman-fashion on his mule, while the barber mounted his with a beard down to the waist of mingled red and white, for it was, as has been said, the tail of a clay-red ox. They took leave of all, and of the good Maritornes, who, sinner as she was, promised to pray a rosary of prayers that God might grant them success in such an arduous and Christian undertaking as that they had in hand. But scarcely had he sallied forth from the inn, when it struck the curate that he was doing wrong in rigging himself out in that fashion, as it was an indecorous thing for a priest to dress himself that way, even though much might depend upon it. And saying so to the barber, he begged him to change dresses, as it was fitter he should be the distressed damsel, while he himself would play the squire's part, which would be less derogatory to his dignity. Otherwise he was resolved to have nothing more to do with the matter, and let the devil take Don Quixote. Just at this moment Sancho came up, and on seeing the pair in such a costume, he was unable to restrain his laughter. The barber, however, agreed to do as the curate wished, and, altering their plan, the curate went on to instruct him how to play his part, and what to say to Don Quixote to induce and compel him to come with them and give up his fancy for the place he had chosen for his idle penance. The barber told him he could manage it properly without any instruction, and as he did not care to dress himself up until they were near where Don Quixote was, he folded up the garments, and the curate adjusted his beard, and they set out under the guidance of Sancho Panza, who went along telling them of the encounter with the madman they met in the Sierra, saying nothing, however, about the finding of the valise and its contents, for with all his simplicity, the lad was a trifle covetous. The next day they reached the place where Sancho had laid the broom branches as marks to direct him to where he had left his master, and recognizing it, he told them that here was the entrance, and that they would do well to dress themselves, if that was required to deliver his master. For they had already told him that going in this guise and dressing in this way were of the highest importance in order to rescue his master from the pernicious life he had adopted. And they charged him strictly not to tell his master who they were, or that he knew them, and should he ask, as ask he would, if he had given the letter to Dulcinea, to say that he had, and that, as she did not know how to read, she had given an answer by word of mouth, saying that she commanded him, on pain of her displeasure, to come and see her at once. And it was a very important matter for himself, because in this way, and with what they meant to say to him, they felt sure of bringing him back to a better mode of life, and inducing him to take immediate steps to become an emperor or monarch, for there was no fear of his becoming an archbishop. All this Sancho listened to and fixed it well in his memory, and thanked them heartily for intending to recommend his master to become an emperor instead of an archbishop. For he felt sure that in the way of bestowing rewards on their squires, emperors could do more than archbishops errant. He said, too, that it would be as well for him to go on before them to find him, and give his lady's answer, for that perhaps might be enough to bring him away from the place without putting them to all this trouble. They approved of what Sancho proposed, and resolved to wait for him until he brought back word of having found his master. Sancho pushed on into the glens of the Sierra, leaving them in one through which there flowed a little gentle rivulet, and where the rocks and trees afforded a cool and grateful shade. It was an August day, with all the heat of one, and the heat in those parts is intense, and the hour was 3 in the afternoon, all of which made the spot the more inviting and tempted them to wait there for Sancho's return, which they did. They were reposing then in the shade, when a voice, unaccompanied by the notes of any instrument but sweet and pleasing in its tone, reached their ears, at which they were not a little astonished, as the place did not seem to them likely quarters for one who sang so well. For though it is often said that shepherds of rare voice are to be found in the woods and fields, this is rather a flight of the poet's fancy than the truth. And still more surprised were they when they perceived that what they heard sung were the verses not of rustic shepherds, but of polished wits of the city. And so it proved. For the verses they heard were these. What makes my quest of happiness seem vain? Disdain. What bids me to abandon hope of ease? Jealousies. What holds my heart in anguish of suspense? Absence. If that be so, then for my grief, where shall I turn to seek relief?
when hope on every side lies slain by absence, jealousies, disdain. What the prime cause of all my woe doth prove? Love. What at my glory ever looks askance? Chance. Whence is permission to afflict me given? Heaven. If that be so, I but await the stroke of a resistless fate, since, working for my woe, these three, love, chance, and heaven, in league I see. What must I do to find remedy? Die. What is the cure for love, when coy and strange? Change. What, if all fail, will cure the heart of sadness? Madness. If that be so, it is but folly to seek a cure for melancholy. Ask where it lies, the answer says.